own, guaranteed.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
I want to remind you that we're still working on these ideas for a premium service, the Paracast Pro. We welcome your suggestions, special interviews, special videos, lots more stuff in the wings. Let us know what you think about all of this. Write us, news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. We have Nick Redfern. He's author of a book called The Real Men in Black, subtitled Evidence, Famous Cases, and True Stories of These Mysterious Men and Their Connection to UFO Phenomena. And he's not talking about the lyrics of Will Smith's Men in Black song from the movie. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. Before we broke, you were telling us a story, and the story is that these men in black, in a sense, materialized in his apartment in New York, right? Where he said, for example, that he was talking to Brad Steiger about this, and he said that the three men in black materialized in his New York apartment. Would you go on?
Yeah, sure. Well, this is sort of one of the strangest stories and surprising stories. You know, I never anticipated getting anything like this. When I interviewed Brad Steiger, because he was sort of a key player, well, he still is a key player in the phenomena today, but certainly, you know, he's one of the earliest players in the second wave of Men in Black encounters in the 1960s, and got to know people like Jim Moseley, John Keel, Alan Greenfield, all the early people in MIB research. And Brad told me there was a story that was given to him by Keel that he felt a little bit reticent about telling, but he said because Keel had told him personally, you know, he felt now was the time to relate it. And he said that how on one occasion Keel had told him that Keel himself had had an encounter with the man in black.
We already covered that in a previous segment, Nick. I don't want to repeat it. I just want to go to the point where they appear in his apartment. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, the men in black appear in Keel's apartment, and essentially, you know, there's a threat made. You know, it's sort of an intimidating thing about, you know, this isn't an area to be digging into or delving into. And the story was that, you know, it really did spook Keel. You know, it certainly didn't make him quit his research, but the fact that these MIB appeared, you know, made the usual veiled threat and then kind of ethereally vanished as weirdly as they'd first appeared, made him realize and made Steiger realize as well that this wasn't just, you know, some sort of government psychological operation, that there was a far weirder thing going on.
And you're sure certain here that Keel, at least as far as Steiger was concerned, was not pulling his leg?
Steiger told me that he was absolutely convinced that Keel, from his mannerisms and the way he related the story, was telling him an absolute truth, you know, that Keel fully believed this experience occurred and related it as it occurred to Brad.
Chris?
Well, that kind of would explain some of Keel's post, you know, Mothman prophecy work as being, you know, he kind of ratcheted up the paranoia, I think, in the man. He seemed to get a little twitchy after that. Do you see any other, I mean, you've researched this subject so extensively. Do we have any other clues that Keel may have had other encounters with men in black or was warned off particular investigations? Of course, you know, Mothman is filled with these weird phone calls, arriving at a motel just by chance. He wanted to, you know, stop for the night, and he'd arrive at the hotel, and there'd be a message waiting for him, and he picked the motel at random. This is like the area, I think, where we get into more of a paranormal version of the men in black that almost seem to be time-based in nature, and I'm sure we're going to cover the whole, you know, time traveler potential in this show. But do we have any other indications that Keel was visited subsequently to the Mothman investigation?
Well, we don't have hard evidence that he was visited, but I mean, you do make a good point when you point out that I think one of the things Keel realized was that the more he delved into the phenomenon, the more the phenomenon began to get its grips into him. And, you know, you rightly point out, and as I note in the book, you know, he would go on investigations and have these weird events, weird synchronicities happen, pulling up a hotel and then finding somebody calls him in a weird mechanical voice on the phone when no one knows he's there. You know, there was mail interference, extensive telephone interference. And I think reading Keel's work, you begin to realize that he was clear on one thing, that when you look into this phenomena, somehow it realizes you're looking and it turns the tables. And I think Keel alludes to this throughout his work, and, you know, purely and simply because it happened to him. And I think because of this largely unknown story told by Brad Steiger, then I think this has to have had some sort of bearing upon Keel's conclusions. You know, if he wasn't pulling anybody's leg or whatever, or wasn't hallucinating, and three shadowy figures really did materialize in his room, then to me that would fully explain why his writings from then on went down the pathway that sort of extended far away from, you know, nuts and bolts UFOs, or Mothman is just a flesh and blood animal, or Bigfoot's a flesh and blood animal. You know, his entire writing from then on pretty much was down the pathway that, no, this is definitively paranormal, regardless of how we define what the paranormal is or isn't.
It also sounds like it became definitively paranoid because of fear that something bad was going to happen.
Well, this is actually something. This is a trend or a characteristic that you find throughout the entirety of MIB lore and visitation. I don't think there's hardly anybody I interviewed for the book, in terms of eyewitnesses at least, who had had a Man in Black encounter, who didn't, for a while afterwards at least, to a degree, become paranoid. Now, that's not, you know, that's not besmirching their character. It was just the fact that the experience so traumatized them that for a while some of them, you know, they would be looking through the blinds, and if a black car pulled up outside or went slowly by in the street, you know, it would induce a panic attack or the heart would just race. Other people, you know, it didn't just sort of affect them for a month or two. You know, it had major long-standing effects to where they almost plunged into kind of like a post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, Albert Bender, you know, when his experiences when the Men in Black began, you know, he was sort of bright-eyed and ready to hit the UFO research field, so to speak. Over time, you know, he would be pummeled by migraines, ill health. He developed a totally illogical fear of developing cancer when he was only a, you know, very young man. You know, he would see shadowy entities, even in the cinema when he would go on a Saturday night. You know, he claimed to have seen sort of Men in Black type characters sitting in the corner in the shadows of the old theater when he'd be there watching films. So, you know, we see this developing massively in people who've had MIB visits, you know, the idea that it overwhelms them, the experience overwhelms them, and to an extent, you know, it takes over their life. And Bender also developed, from his own work, realize this, he developed OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. He actually points out in his book how in his office everything had its own place, and he could immediately tell if anything had been moved even slightly. And he would even get really irritated if friends visited and picked something up and didn't put it up back in its exact place. You know, that's like a classic OCD symptom, which is often provoked when somebody has a traumatic event, and controlling their environment helps them to ease that trauma.
Well, this is an interesting case here then. And can we look into a whole case history of people with OCD that something frightening precipitated those particular reactions or behavior?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't try to, you know, claim to be a psychologist or psychiatrist or anything like that. But I think, you know, a lot of long-standing psychological conditions do have a basis in, you know, one underlying incident or event. I mean, I'm not going to name names, but I mean, I'll give you a classic example. It has nothing to do with ufology, but it does have a bearing on, you know, the question you brought up.
I'll ask you to recite that case in our next segment.
Okay.
We have Nick Redfern. The book is called The Real Men in Black. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
The Paracast.
Whoa!
Have you been sitting on a few great domain name ideas but haven't locked them in for yourself? Good. Now you can buy them through the number one domain name registrar, Namecheap.com, as voted by the top tech blog Lifehacker. Just like the name says, you can buy domains cheap, as low as $2.99, and every new domain comes with WhoisGuard, our special privacy service, free for the first year. Now that you know, it's time to grab those domain names before someone else does. Namecheap.com. Go now. Namecheap.com.
Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us off the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluing. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to protect your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They both have maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them until now, your cash would have the buying power of only $4,800. But your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call John Ballman today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
We all need to prepare ourselves. You might have the food, water, gold, and silver, but ask yourself, are you truly prepared? That's why you need to visit MaineMilitary.com. MaineMilitary.com carries everything you need. Gas masks, wool blankets, fire starter kits, high-capacity magazines, chemical suits, military surplus items, and much more. Do you own a firearm? MaineMilitary.com has a large selection of pistols and rifles suited for your needs. Are your local stores sold out of ammunition? Call or visit them today for prices on hard-to-find ammo and bulk ammo orders. You don't need to worry about having a military surplus store in your area because MaineMilitary.com is the only store you'll ever need, all from the comfort of your computer. Visit them online today at MaineMilitary.com. That's Maine, like the state, military.com. Or call them at 1-877-608-0179. That's 1-877-608-0179.
If you drive for a living, you don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass way stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed while the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you want to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out on iTunes.
I will not tell you where that laughter came from.
Dang, Nick. You're scaring me. You're raining on my Paracast parade here.
Nick Redfern is joining us, and when Nick is here, it's never real. or it's real beyond reason, depending on your point of view. The book is The Real Men in Black. Speaking of real, I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. And you're about to talk about something that precipitated an OCD behavioral pattern?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's nothing to do with UFOs, but it does serve as a parallel as to how traumatic events can provoke unusual behavior. And, you know, and we can apply this to the Men in Black. The example is when I was at school, I went to school with a girl who developed anorexia and got extremely, extremely ill with it and basically got like a warning from the doctor, you know, that if you continue on this pathway, you'll just, your heart muscles will be so affected and degenerated, you know, you'll have a heart attack at 25 or whatever and die. She actually got over the anorexia, but for, I can't remember the exact amount of time, but I do recall it was like 6 or 7 years, literally. She had like a phobia of exercising or, you know, anything like this where it might put a strain on her heart. And she had like 3 or 4 heart checkups at the hospital just to make sure that there was nothing wrong with her heart. And the doctors were like, well, no, you're one of the lucky ones. It's fine. 6 months later, she had to go back and have another one just to make sure, and another one just to make sure. And it was kind of a phobia that she damaged her heart. And it came to dominate. She wouldn't go dancing, worried about walking, running, had to keep having it checked. And I think, you know, this shows how a traumatic event can actually mold a person's life. And I think that is what happened with Bender. You know, it was so traumatic, whatever it was, that it had an effect on his entire outlook with respect to UFOs, his subconscious, which may have had a bearing on how these entities manifested, maybe. And we find that in other witnesses, you know, as I said, the twitching the curtains, worrying that there's a black car outside. You know, it's all sort of symptomatic of a similar psychological issue that has like an initial starting point.
Nick, one of the things that we do here at the Paracast, as you well know, is introduce a thread on the forums that allows our forum posters to pose some questions. And before we get too far down the pike here in the show, I'd like to introduce a few questions that we've had posted from the forum. So, you know, you mentioned this is from Oceans Lost, who is a fairly new member of the Paracast forum. And I want to change tact a little bit here and go back into the history of this, and especially in the British Isles. My question is, Nick, have there been any reports in England at all? Being English as well, I haven't heard of any, and if there are do the sightings happen in the country or city more? In other words, is it a rural or is it an urban thing? You did mention the Wales, you know, reports from 1905. Are there any other outside of the U.S. cases, let's say, just to kind of cast a broad net here, where we have fairly well-documented reports or people going on the record saying that Men in Black have visited them outside of the U.S.?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a number of significant cases. You know, you can find cases from Australia. I talk about the book Australia, Mexico, Puerto Rico, the U.S., Britain. I mean, to give you an example from Britain, you know, originally where I'm from, so, you know, I know of a number of these cases. What's interesting is that in the U.S., the men in black, when they appear, they often turn up in black cars, which seem very out of date for the period. You know, they'll turn up in what look like brand new 1960s Chevys or something like that. In England, they turn up in what look like 1960s era Jaguars. So, you know, we have this angle as well, which is sort of a parallel, the behavior of the men in black, the style, the way they turn up. There's one very interesting case that I looked into, which actually does push at least some of the men in black stuff down the government angle. And this is a really interesting case. It involves a woman named Anne Lehman, who I interviewed a few years ago. And she told me how in 1962, she was living actually in a countryside area, a very rural area, and she'd seen this strange light going across the sky. Actually said it came back on several nights, but she said it wasn't a star. You know, it was moving at speed, but it would be flying low over the old hills at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And she took a step to contact her local Air Force base and said, you know, I've seen this strange thing, what is it? She said that a couple of nights later, literally at night, somebody turned up at the front door and she said it was a guy in a black suit, black hat, and there was a black car outside, and she invited him in and he listened carefully as she told this story. And the upshot was he said, well, it probably would be a good idea if you didn't talk to your friends about this. And he asked if he could take some pencil drawings that she'd made of the object and its movements, and she said, sure, you know, thought it was going to be for being part of the investigation. and he vanished as mysteriously as it appeared. She never got the drawings back, and, you know, confiscation of materials is often a classic aspect of Men in Black stories. Now, this would be just another Men in Black story from this woman, Ann Lehman, were it not for the fact that a few years ago, when the British government was declassifying its various UFO files, it declassified a whole swathe of files from the early 1960s. And one of the files actually dealt with Ann Lehman's experience. And there's a report in the file written by the man who visited her, and he's identified as a Sergeant J.W. Scott, who was attached to the British Royal Air Force's Provost and Security Services. The Provost and Security Services are like the British equivalent of the US Air Force Office of Special Investigations. But the PNSS, one of their official mandates is to do undertake psychological warfare operations, counterintelligence operations, the sort of very type of people you would expect to go out on these missions. The fact that this guy appeared in a black car, dressed as a man in black, not in military uniform, does make me think that this is an example of where government personnel may actually have almost sort of camouflaged themselves as the weirder men in black to cover their tracks. And they would have covered their tracks had this file not quietly surfaced at the London National Archives a few years ago, fully confirming everything that Anne said about getting the visits and materials being taken from her and not returned.
Yeah, I have a question here from one of our moderators at the forum.theparacast.com, Ron Collins, and he brings up a very interesting question, which I think is quite insightful. I often hear that they wear nondescript clothing, thus the MIB moniker, but have they ever been seen to carry equipment, wear watches, talk on phones, or utilize technology in any way?
Now, that's actually a very good point. For the most part, they don't. You know, you would imagine if these were government people, particularly in today's technology, and we get reports up to the present day, you know, they would be turning up with tape recorders. Even in the 70s, you know, sort of the early chunky, bigger tape recorders, you know, they didn't have anything like that. It was almost just a case of turning up, asking a lot of weird questions, but not chronicling anything either by audio equipment or, you know, writing it down quickly in shorthand or whatever. It's just a case of almost sitting there listening, then thank you very much, and leaving. It's almost as if, you know, the interview is actually like a stage for something else. It's like the reason for the visit, as I speculate in the book when we get into the issue of things like tulpas and stuff like that. Maybe the purpose of the visit...
We're vampires, inviting them in.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
we'll get into the vampire realm. Like True Blood. Surely. Nick Redfern's the guest. The book is The Real Men in Black. Are they vampires? Your co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Podcast.
Oh. Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans the galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled LeCig.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
Is your church, school, or organization desperately looking for new fundraising ideas? Tired of the same old candles or candy, taking orders, inventory, and low profits? Well, here's great news. 10X Fundraising guarantees 10 times traditional profits with zero hassle. For an amazing free bonus, free shipping, and an extra 10% off, enter GCN when you go to 10xfundraising.com. That's the number 10, the letter X, fundraising.com. Or call 800-480-8797. Visit 10X Fundraising for 10 times the profit today.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it, now you can. Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go. Now you can build food storage without going into debt. Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month. Our clubs work with everyone's budget. Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry, go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
We're going to record Nick's laughter. Devilish laughter there. Nick Redfern is the author. Co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. The Real Men in Black is the book. We're answering your questions, and you raise this question. Okay, the Men in Black, we invite them into their homes, manifestations of some kind of evil force.
Yeah, that well, has yeah, to be I mean, invited
this,
in.
Yeah, this is gets into sort of really controversial areas, but the way I look at it, you know, controversy, well, so what? You know, there's no point playing it safe when the facts suggest we shouldn't play it safe, you know, and the Men in Black mystery does dictate by the very way it acts that we go down some weird pathways, and one of these is that sort of relevant to the tulpa, the phenomenon of the tulpa. This is an area that deeply interests me. Essentially, tulpas are what you might call in simple terms constructed life forms, constructed or born out of the human mind. You know, the idea that intense focus on one particular issue or imagery in the human mind can almost or literally externalize it. You know, kind of we give birth to like a mind monster or something like that, that can have some sort of semblance outside of the mind, like a quasi-reality in the real world, and that it sustains itself via feeding on high emotional states. You know, we feed on food, water, whatever. They feed on bleeding, dry human emotion. And it is a fact that many MIB witnesses have said that, you know, when they invite these weird-looking characters into their home, afterwards they feel totally drained of energy, you know, like zapped, just need to sleep. That was one of the facets of Albert Bender's story. You know, he would just be wiped out during and after the experience.
Is this the beginning or a source of the vampire legends in our society?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is something I speculate in the book, because if you look at vampire folklore, one of the traditions or one of the beliefs was that before the vampire can come in your home. It has to be invited. That's something we find with the Men in Black reports. You know, they actually don't, you know, turn up and force their way into your house, as people might assume if they're sort of there to threaten you. They just kind of patiently, almost enigmatically stand on the doorstep waiting to be invited in. And then when they are invited in, you know, it seems they start to ask questions which are threatening and intimidating, and actually often get the witness into a deep state of fear. But what's weird is that sometimes the cases or the encounter the person had, there's nothing special about it. Sometimes they are, but there have even been people who have been visited by the MIB whose UFO encounter was just a weird light flashing across the sky who they might have happened to tell a few people about. Nothing sinister or spectacular about it.
Nick, there's even cases where people literally are finishing up a sighting. They go inside their house and there's a Men in Black there. So, I mean, you have both scenarios going on. And let's not forget the Bender and Keel claims that these Men in Black manifested within their personal space in their house without being invited. So we have both sides of the equation going on.
Yeah, we definitely do. And I think, you know, it's important to note that fear, the inducement of fear, or the provoking fear, seems to be a central point of the encounter. Now, some people have naturally assumed that the fear angle is just because the person's worried they've been visited by the government and they're going to get into big trouble. But it seems that investigating the encounter and wanting the witness to stay silent is almost like a ruse. It's almost as if they provoke the fear, because that's the intent of the visit, is to put the person in a state of fear. Then, you know, we could argue, well, is that then evidence that some of these things could be tulpas, the idea that they feed on that fear? Now, it is a fact also that if you look at the stories of these MIB, if they are tulpas, they do fit the pattern. They don't seem like flesh and blood creatures. They seem to be very ill-informed about customs and ways of life, etc. They get confused. They run out of energy.
Temporary life forms.
Temporary life forms, yeah, almost as if, you know, it's kind of like a computer program. You know, you run the program, and then when the program's finished, it shuts down. That's what they seem to be like, you know, that they're sent out to perform one particular task. They have a rudimentary understanding of what they're doing and who they are, but they're also temporary. And
they have no social graces. They have no social graces. I think Jacques Vallée. You didn't mention the Happy Camp case, if memory serves me correct here. But Jacques Vallée, I think, in Confrontations, mentioned Men in Black that attempted to eat Jell-O with a fork like they'd never seen Jell-O before. I seem to remember that. I'm not sure if my attribution is correct. But
you mean don't eat it with a fork? Excuse me.
Well, what I'm bringing up here, Gene and Nick, is the absurdity of some of these encounters. They tend to be dressed wrong for the weather. They tend to really not seem to have a total grip on their place in reality, which is what Nick is describing here. What about that is a clue for us here, Nick, when we're looking at this subject?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the clue is that for me, I've come to the realization, I really do believe this, that the threat to the witness is actually a ruse, and that the threat is to provoke a high emotional state. And I really do believe that some of these things are tulpa-like. You know, whether they're literally tulpas or there's some sort of phenomena we don't fully understand, but they do.
Well, why don't you define tulpa? It's a Tibetan term, number one, some of our new listeners. I mean, the whole concept of a tulpa is not well known in the Western world. Why don't you give us a quick thumbnail, a Cliff Notes version of that?
Well, basically, you quite rightly point out, you know, it's sort of a Tibetan term. A tulpa, you imagine, you know, let's say, for example, you focus on an image in your mind of, let's say, a huge wolf with glowing red eyes, and you focus on that image for days and weeks, and you sort of nurture it, and, you know, you construct the image of it, how its fur looks, how it feels, etc., etc., and you focus on projecting this image externally out of your mind. And then 2 weeks later, the local newspaper reports on somebody seen in the nearby woods a huge wolf with glowing red eyes. You know, it's the idea that you've created something out of your imagination through deep, intense motivation, if you like, and then you've externalized it. And more importantly, when the tulpa exists or is released, if you like, or unleashed into the real world, it has some semblance of independent reality, but it can be reabsorbed by the creator, or if it gains enough strength itself, it can have a stronger and deeper grip on reality. And to do so, it sort of bleeds and feeds upon human emotion, or in high states of emotion particularly. So in other words, it may be that these entities, all these weird entities that we never catch, whether it's Bigfoot, Men in Black, whatever, the reason they're seen isn't accidental. They need to be seen so they can feed. You know, it's like maybe Bigfoot doesn't exist until it needs to feed again, and then it ensures that somebody sees it. That person gets into a huge state of excitement or fear. It bleeds the witness dry, and then it vanishes, just leaving a few weird footprints that seem to suggest a physical reality, but that we never, ever catch them. You know, it could be the same with the Men in Black. The reason we never find them is because they only turn up when they need to feed. And then, you know, they're back in their ethereal reality, whatever it may be.
Well, you brought up a really good alleged example of this in your book, which I also brought up in my book, Stalking the Tricksters. And that was the journey of Alexander David Neal to Tibet. Yeah. And her training in how to actually manifest the tulpa, in her claim that she actually was able to do this. Why don't you describe the process that she had to undergo to get rid of this tulpa, which I find very fascinating, because she created something that she didn't really have the ability to deal with, according to her.
We'll get into that in our next segment, which is how to get rid of an invading MIB or mysterious creature, frightening being, whatever. I'm glad they don't happen.
A tulpa.
A tulpa, yes. I'm glad it doesn't happen to me. Really glad. I'm not going to
invite this. I'm your tulpa, Gene.
Oh? Nick Redfern is the guest. The book is The Real Men in Black. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
The largest part of gaining radiant health is detoxification. You can drink ionized water, cleanse your intestines, eat a perfect diet, and even take lots of quality supplements, and in many instances, only make minimal progress. What is the key to detoxifying your body of mercury, heavy metals, chemicals, and drugs? It is glutathione. Glutathione is the master antioxidant used to detoxify your entire body. It stops free radicals, keeps cells young, and reduces inflammation. One World Whey protein powder may be able to raise your glutathione production by 64% or more. One World Whey is more effective than any other whey protein powder on the market because it is unheated and from grass-fed cows. All other, quote, cold-processed whey protein powders have been heated and damaged by 15% or more. One World Whey comes in three delicious flavors. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldwhey.com. That's oneworldwhey.com.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher-safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids, the original since 1976.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
This is Jim Mosley, editor of Saucer Smear, and I'm here to say a good word or two about the Paracast, which I believe is the gold standard of paranormal radio. Listen to it if you can.
For a second there, I thought Nick Redfern was going to give us the famous laugh from The Shadow. Remember, who knows what evil lurks in the heart of men? The Shadow knows. Oh, well. Actually, I think that Alec Baldwin did a really good Shadow laugh in that movie, which was otherwise a failure. We're talking about a reality here, The Real Men in Black. By Nick Redfern, the co-host is Chris O'Brien, I'm Gene Steinberg. We were exploring a question from Chris, and you were about to deliver your answer, Nick, when I rudely interrupted you. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'll just send the men in black around.
I think you already have.
Well, yeah, we're talking about Alexandra David Neal. She was born in 1868, and she was actually the first woman ever to be granted the title of a Lama in Tibet. And she actually lived for 100 years, so I guess, you know, digging into tulpas wasn't too bad for her in the long term. She traveled wildly all across the Himalayas, and in 1932 she wrote a book called Magic and Mystery in Tibet. This sort of really opens us up to some of the work that Alexandra David Neal got involved in. And she became acquainted with the phenomena of the tulpa purely from, you know, hanging out in the Himalayas in Tibet and understanding the nature of what it was to create one of these things. So she had a go at doing it. And what she said she actually did was to try to create, or she visualized in her mind, the image of like a friendly-looking, overweight monk, not unlike the sort of the Friar Tuck character in the Robin Hood films, you know, as Hollywood portrays Friar Tuck. And she said that it was a lengthy, time-consuming, and actually draining process to try and create this image in her mind with a view to externalizing it. But she said eventually she would see what looked like this sort of jolly fat monk and, you know, a peripheral vision. You know, she would look up or whatever from reading, and there would be this shadow in the corner of her eye, and then it would vanish in a second. But over time, it would hang around for 5 seconds, then 10, and it would become more substantial over time as if it was gaining strength and gaining reality. What she said then happened was it became more ominous that this sort of its jolly character became sly and malevolent. Its overweight form became sort of lean and muscular and powerful. And she felt that it was escaping from the confines of her mind and getting out of her control and actually becoming malevolent and resentful of her, possibly due to the fact that she created it. And the creator does have the ability, if they know how to reabsorb the tulpa. And, of course, the tulpa, people who accept this sort of phenomenon, the last thing it wants is to be reabsorbed. And she said she had like a tremendous battle to actually succeed in reabsorbing it. It was sort of, as she said it in her own words, it had become tenacious for life and didn't want to give it up. You know, if some of these things do become tenacious for life and they don't give it up, and then they start, you know, existing in our world out of our control, that may well explain why people have these weird experiences of fear-inducing entities turning up, exhausting the person and bleeding them dry, and then saying thank you very much and vanishing as mysteriously as they came. It may be the equivalent of us going out to a restaurant. You know, that sounds crazy, but it may be that equivalent of, you know, an emergency sugar fix for a diabetic when, you know, energy runs low and it's time to feed again.
We have another question here from one of our longtime forum posters, Mike, who is considered a paranormal master on the forum. Nick, I really enjoyed your recent stint on Dreamland and wonder if you would care to further elaborate on what you think of what we call death and how that may or may not have something to do with the phenomenon. I get this feeling here, you know, you're talking about, you know, the color black and people being in a place of fear. Do you think death has something to do with this? Are there any cases where we have men in black showing up as portents for disasters or death? Obviously, the Mothman prophecies and the collapse of the Silver Bridge would be on Christmas Eve, I think, 66 would be a classic illustration of this. Do we have any other sort of portent-type men in black encounters?
Well, you know, I mean, that's difficult to say. I mean, there are reports, you know, where the men in black certainly offer threats of death. But, you know, in terms of actually being like a precursor to it, I actually do think the best example we have is the Silver Bridge in conjunction with the Mothman stories about the Mothman and the Men in Black were running around Point Pleasant from sort of 65 to 67. And at the height of all this activity, you have the collapse of the bridge, the Silver Bridge in the town, and the deaths of dozens of people. Now, you know, to what extent this means the Men in Black have some sort of tie-in with death or the afterlife or whatever, you know, it's difficult to say. What I would say is that one of the people I interviewed for the book extensively was a man named Ray Beauchesne, who's both an Anglican priest and a former MUFON state director for the state of Nebraska.
And a major source for your book, Final Events,
I interviewed him for that one as well, yeah. And Ray told me how he knew Barker and he actually met Bender. And he's dug deeply into the Men in Black mystery. And he believes, you know, based around his sort of Christian belief systems, that the Men in Black, some of them, are sort of paranormal, occult or possibly even demonic entities that sort of masquerade as the MIB as a means to get their grips into, I guess, susceptible people like Bender and, you know, further open the human races, you know, to a negative occult world, if you like, to sort of lure us in with a, you know, like a dangling carrot manifesting as UFOs and something exciting and then, which did happen with Ben. You know, he got in all excited and then it became wholly negative, just dominated by bad luck and ill health. So, you know, that's not necessarily directly connected with what the person asked the question asked, but it does sort of relate to the idea that we could be dealing with, as Ray thinks, you know, negative entities that, you know, don't have our best interests at heart.
Well, here's another question from one of our posters, Trained Observer. I think you knew Carla Turner, correct? You met her. He wants to know if you are aware of any Men in Black encounters that she may have had, you know, that she did experience an untimely passing, kind of in lines with our line of questioning here.
Yeah, no, I actually didn't know Carla Turner, but one of the people I interviewed for the book was Greg Bishop, a good friend of mine, and Greg knew Carla very well, and they interacted and chatted a lot and exchanged letters quite deeply on the whole UFO abduction angle, alien abduction, which was Carla's big area. Greg told me something that was sort of deeply relative to the whole Men in Black mystery. And that was that on many occasions, you know, this was sort of pre-internet era, or for the most part, if we're talking sort of 93, 94. And he told me how him and Carla would exchange letters in the mail. And when the letters would arrive at his end and at her end, they were always open and tampered with and being resealed, but in a fashion where it was obvious that whoever had done it had done it in such a way as to let both Greg and Carla know that their letters had been opened. You know, it wasn't done carefully. It was almost done as if to say, just to let you know, we're watching.
In a cavalier fashion.
Yeah.
which kind of dovetails into my Men in Black case. The only one that I have, other than my own personal experience with having photographs, maps, and files taken from my office by a team of dark-clothed individuals. These guys were wearing night vision, though.
Don't gloss over this, Chris, please.
I'm not going to gloss over it. Just read my books. It's all there. I had a case. A woman claimed she was an abductee. She was referred to me by the sheriff's department, by the dispatcher, who was a friend. She said, this lady needs someone to talk to. Please talk to her. And, you know, I don't want to digress into the whole case, which is absolutely fascinating. My only real, I think, truly worthy abduction case that I investigated from the San Luis Valley. But one of the interesting elements that she mentioned was that her mail was being tampered with, which, you know, dovetails in with what you were saying about Greg and Carla. And she would be about, a couple, 300 yards from her mailbox down a long driveway, unobstructed. And she was having problems with her mail not arriving, people saying, you know, I sent you something, did you get it? And she would say no. Well, one day she was looking out her window and she saw a dark, old-fashioned car. She didn't really describe the model, the make, but she said it was definitely an old car, but looked brand new. And she swore up and down. I tried to get her to come up with a different term, but she said the Blues Brothers were coming, got out of this car and were rifling through her mail at her mailbox. And I said, well, what do you mean the Blues Brothers? And she said they looked like Jake and Elwood. They were dressed in like pork pie hats. They had thin, skinny ties. She was looking at them through a spotting scope. They were dressed all in black suits. They would rifle through her mail. She would run outside, get on her ATV, and start hot-footing it down to her mailbox, and they would, you know, get into the car and take off.
I'll tell you what, this is going to be a cat-and-mouse game. We'll get into more of this in a moment. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. Our guest is Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24-7. You heard me right, every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.